football on off the ball.
Toby, I'm just a bit standoffish, to be honest. And I just said that to the lads in the dressing room. We're getting too much respect. And for me, on a football pitch, when you give teams too much respect, it's a fear. Yeah, didn't like it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
All right, it is 7:30. It's Wednesday morning. You're very welcome along to Off The Ball Breakfast. Jonathan Wilson's going to join us at 8:05. The championship season is up and running next weekend. And then the weekend after that is the Charity Shield. And the weekend after that is the Premier League. There's been plenty of transfer activity that we haven't really spoken about on the show over the last while. We get into that at 8:05. And the return of the number 9 across Europe. Will Genia is going to join us from Japan to preview the third test and look back on the second Lions test. And then Finian Hanley is going to pick his Gaelic football team of the season, and Eve Conway is going to preview Champions League action tonight for Athlone against Cardiff. But maybe some Athlone heavy favourites for this game.
No one seems to know what's going on. Some people are writing that Athlone are heavy underdogs.
Yeah. So
who knows?
Cullen, good morning to you.
Hi, Jar.
Dara, good morning to you.
How's it going, lads?
We've been sleeping on the fact that Ireland have the most representation I think we've ever had in the Tour de France. Right, we haven't had three before, have we?
We've never had anyone before.
Right, okay.
So that's what makes it even more unbelievable that we've got a podium already. So yeah, we have three this year, never done before in the modern format. And Larry Gillespie goes out and gets a third place yesterday. And only a third place to literally the greatest cyclist of all time in Marianne Vos and the best sprinter in the world in Lorena Vibe. So pretty good going, pretty good going. We actually have some immediate reaction from Lara Gillespie through our daily vlog series to play. So if we want to play that now.
History mom and history makers.
This is my mom. She came to support for stage 3 and stage 4. So I have my good luck charm and my good luck earrings. Lucky charms.
I just started a video and then I realized I wasn't even recording. 130k, so it's a little bit shorter than yesterday. I think I was a bit too confident yesterday, thinking I'd get in for the sprint. But it's okay, we fight for another day. The spirits are still high.
So today is the final sprint day. This is the last day that's good for me. I hope that I can be up there today. I feel like my legs are coming better every day.
I'm gonna vlog. Let's go!
Okay, now you see how crazy it is going to presentation.
Going for the line is Lara Gillespie with Lorena Wiebes.
First Irish bogey win Tour de France fan.
Woohoo! History made.
History moment, history makers.
We had a little drag towards the finish and I was like, oh, come on. And then it was just perfect. Okay, third isn't the win, but it's baby steps, okay? And honestly, I didn't vlog the last few days because I was kind of low-key sad. The Irish at Tour de France is actually on a good roll. I had to keep up with Ben Healy somehow. I feel like being at the run. May the tour begin with the real climbs. R.I.P.
Wow. These are like, so we've had Lara Gillespie in the studio. We've been talking to her basically since the Olympics last year.
Yeah.
Where at one point it kind of looked like she might be about to sneak into some kind of contention. And at one point she was, because she'd won the Omni at one point. And then afterwards, she was really pissed off, like, because she had not gone there to be in contention. She'd gone there to win a medal. And there she is, not vlogging as part of your vlog series, because she was pissed off that she wasn't doing better.
It's funny because she obviously sends me back all these videos and I was kind of like, this could go one or two ways. She could send me nothing because she's completely pissed off that she got third, or we could get what we got because she's delighted with what she's done. It's unbelievable. We had Fiona Mangan and Mia Griffin are the other two cyclists in the vlog, and they're all history makers, but she's taken another step forward. That's like, all right, they're not just there to, you know, to compete in the race. They're actually there to try and win some stages. Now, like the rest of the race, like Lara was alluding to, is a bit of a struggle for herself and me and Fiona, because it's pretty much just mountains from now on. But she'll be back next year and she may take another step forward. So it's just, it's really cool. And it's really cool to be building on that momentum that Ben Healy's set in place for other Irish cyclists. So pretty exciting times now for Irish cycling.
So check out our Insta.
We're doing daily vlogs with three riders making history. They're about a minute and a half every day, and we're basically just getting pre-race thoughts and then post-race reaction from them all. It's pretty cool to get that access, because the Tour de France is such a special race in that it's such a prolonged thing and it goes on for so long, and they're in this team environment that you don't really get in any other sport. And we're basically getting the behind the scenes of that, so it's pretty cool. So keep an eye on the Instagram, TikTok, all
there's
that stuff.
There's only a week left.
I think there's only 5 days left now. So that was stage four. Yeah, there's 9 days in total. So you can watch them back, obviously, on Instagram from 1 to 4 so far. But yeah, they'll be every day now until the end of it.
What a summer for Irish cycling.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
If someone's a keen cyclist, what's the transition like to actually take it more seriously? So you could have, you know, your standard bicycle.
Yeah.
And then I guess you need contacts or someone to help you out about how to improve your gear and then take cycling more competitively. Because it's not like, you know, you say you watch a World Cup, go out the back garden and start kicking a football around.
Yeah.
What's the process of actually taking this more seriously?
There's no secret that it's a very expensive sport. Mm. The gear is more expensive than
ever. You can do it cheaply or cheaper.
There'll be a point where you have to step it up and probably purchase a bike that's a couple grand, you know, which is probably one of the reasons that it's funny. We're doing so well on the world stage, but their participation levels at an amateur level are probably as low as they've ever been, which is just not good. But like, there is still a lot of young Irish riders making it into academies, world tour academies. Like, so Jamie Mean just recently got signed by Cofidis. So there's plenty of people coming through, but there definitely is a bit of a stall amongst amateur riders, it makes no sense. It's kind of like hurling, and the top level is so elite at the minute, but then the club level is actually not dying, but it's kind of collapsing in itself. But yeah, the step up is to just join your local club.
Yeah.
You know, it is the same. It's obviously not as accessible, but everyone has access to a road. So once you get a bike, then
I'll drive around any Saturday, like it's Lycra Fest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exciting times.
You're a keen cyclist yourself, Jared?
Not out as much as I would like to be. It's doesn't feel very safe cycling in the city.
Well, it's not built for it, is it? It's just inconsistent. No. You'll have a bike lane one road and then nothing at all the next. It is an extreme sport, cycling in Dublin City.
Yeah, it is. And like, I was just, my former colleague Shane Stapleton was on Twitter yesterday talking about hearing this loud pop, and turns around and there's a bike underneath a truck. And luckily, somehow, the person on the bike had been shot out, and the truck driver's down looking, oh my God, I nearly killed you. Like, and that's just like one incident that you hear about on Twitter when you're going about. And actually, on the bike, it's not safe. Down around Bosaurus, there's a bike lane that disappears, and then the big cars and lorries that are driving there, well, they obviously don't. They don't care. You had a bike lane. You don't have a bike lane anymore.
Have you been to Amsterdam recently? It's bike city.
Well, it's always
no matter where you go, like, it's crazy. I don't. If you were an unconfident cyclist, you wouldn't be trying it out in Amsterdam. Everywhere, packed, fast. If you don't look up, you're in trouble. There'll be no walking around with the AirPods in.
Yeah.
No. Well, they you know, they have the primacy of the streets. Do we want to talk about some of the newspaper headlines this morning? Do we?
Yeah.
Well, this is the Irish Times. This is Darrell O'Shea's column. Kerry came to win Sam Maguire. Donegal came to see if they could stay in the fight. So you're reading this. How many mentions do you think Jack O'Connor gets?
None.
Not a single mention of Jack. That's a commitment to the bit, right?
Yeah. I don't think that's true. I don't think they came to stay in the fight. I think that's just how they've always played. They're still a good team. Like,
I think his point is they came not to lose, and Kerry came to win. And that is like, you know, I mean, that's what Jack O'Connor said. We woke up this morning, we were like, we're going to go and we're going to impose ourselves. 4-point goal still on FRC's radar and rules trial is the headline on Colin Key's piece. That game is tonight.
I can't believe that. The 4-point goal coming back after the first weekend they tried. I didn't think they'd do it, but there's only been 7 goals scored more in this year's championship than last year's. So I guess they're going back to it. I think the feeling is that there's an over-reliance on 2-pointers and there's not enough difference. But it's still, I mean, look, the whole thing is great and all, that are going to try new rules. You can't go backward, can't go past, can go back to your own half, of course, in this sandbox game that's happening this week. But
it's tonight.
Martin Brettany is writing in the Irish Independent. Last Sunday's All-Ireland final, the best two teams in the country had a grand total of 481 hand passes. How many teams there were in the 2024 final?
Tell us.
Fewer.
450. So for all these changes, all this great new world that we're talking about in Gaelic football, the problem of the hand pass remains in ball retention and not being able to do much to get it back.
Why is it a problem?
Yeah.
Do
you not enjoy yours?
Because Martin Brandy says it's a problem, it's a problem.
I think it's a compelling argument. I think it's, that was actually a lot of the fatigue and disillusionment with the game was the mind-numbing retention of possession with not much happening.
You weren't,
which is a hand passing. Like, if you look at Gaelic football, it's a mad sport, really, in how generous it is to its participants for a variety of ways of scoring and keeping the ball. So it's very difficult to get the ball back. Very difficult, unless your anticipation is off the charts good and you can read a pass before it happens, which does happen at the top level. We were just talking about before the show, fisting a point is a nice handy option to have. Very nice handy option to have. Yeah. And it seems fairly easy. There's also nothing stopping you putting it down and playing soccer. How many other sports can you play another sport in the sport? And it's totally fine. So if you look at it coldly, like, it's a handy old sport for people to play. But this year, the changes have been monumental in the excitement level, because at its best, there are very few sports like Gaelic football when it's unbelievable.
So the hand passing didn't matter?
I think it did matter.
It was a blight on sport.
I think it still is a problem that they could fix.
You just said it was way more exciting this year.
But
the hand passing figures are the same as last year.
There's still room for improvement. There's more. But there's still a problem of, like, two things can be true, like, which is also what Martin Brettany says, like, you can enjoy the new rules, but you can still find a way to improve elements of the game. You don't have to be so binary.
Well, I just think the hand passing isn't an issue. Like, the game was great. The games have been great this year. It has to be kicked all the time, otherwise it is not true to the spirit of the Gael.
It's not so much the act of kicking as it is the act of a progression of a game that's more interesting. So,
but the game is,
there is, forgive me here, I can't find the figures exactly, but there is a stat done on the Leinster final that Louth kept the ball for the last few moments of the game, which was largely hand passing going backwards. Yeah. And it's great. And, like, obviously you're going to do that with your own team. And, like, look, I'm already,
but whose job is it?
I'm already
that?
Joyous about Paddy Clifford's ball retention in the All-Ireland
literally every final. Sport,
in the All-Ireland final halftime, I'm already joyous about the way that Paddy Clifford lulled everyone into a false sense of security. And largely he was just standing still. But I'm on about when a team is clearly just keeping possession of the ball, hand passing, one sideways or backwards. But the opposition, yeah.
As opposed to changing the rules. Why would you bother changing the rules? Like, the opposition needs to take a risk. And the whole point is...
But that goes back to the how hard it is to get the ball back.
But it's hard when you decide you're not going to try.
So if I'm hand-passing from me to you, and I go in to tackle you, and then Dara comes in, and it's a triangle, someone else comes in to join.
But you can't do the piggy in the middle. Like, where's the piggy in the middle?
Jesus, like, that's the soul-destroying nature of the game. If it's a team with any bit of decent ability to hold on to the ball, if I get the ball and I'm ahead 4 points... ahead with 2 minutes to go, it's like, I'm just going to hand pass this
all
the
way back.
This
is not the punishment for losing.
Yeah,
like,
it is.
You're losing for a reason. That's why you're in that position.
And you haven't taken the risk to try and win it back. It's actually less difficult than you're painting it out to win back possession. It's about whether or not you actually put the press on and whether or not you risk. So the risk reward is, if you turn somebody over, you have 3-on-3 immediately inside. Donegal didn't press out. Press resistance was the word that Jim used, but maybe try, like, in the last few minutes, try and press out on Paddy. And if he goes past you, okay, he goes past you, but you're giving up the one as opposed to the goal, which we've seen. There's fewer goals scored than they expected because the risk reward isn't really worth it. I think that, like, look, Martin Redding's been writing about hand passing for 30 years, and some people are just not going to be happy until every single thing they want is achieved. But the sport has taken a quantum leap forward.
Yeah.
I think that's far more important to acknowledge than, like, some people don't like hand passing. I actually think it's an incredible skill. You're seeing people hand pass off their weak hand 30, 40 yards and it's going straight to someone's chest. I mean, I don't think it's easy.
All right, well, we'll agree to disagree on it, but like, I can still enjoy the new rules, as I hope I have said to you, that I still enjoyed the year that was, but there can still be areas to improve.
Yeah,
like, two things can be true. Just because I'm telling you that I don't like the hand pass doesn't mean I don't like the game.
The 4-point goal would be much better, like, than this obsession with there being too many hand passes.
I'm
based on the number of, like, I'm going to pick this one example.
Sorry, a lot of the boredom of the game last year, a lot of it centered around the excessive hand passing. A lot of it. Now, the new rules have helped negate away from that problem, was they actually haven't dealt directly with that, but everything else helps it out. So the game is faster, problem, it's more interesting, and there's more to gain from being ambitious. There was no real incentive for ambition last year.
It's a fake diagnosis, I think. It's a misdiagnosis of what the issue was. The issue was that teams could keep possession and have 15 men in a combined small area being marked by essentially 14 men, and they were able to funnel the ball back and forth, and teams were totally risk averse because they thought that, oh, if we can see 12 points, we're going to lose the game. Now teams have to be more aggressive, trying to score more. They're hurling scores, as we're seeing at this stage, and there was going to be an issue with the 12-11. I personally would have liked to have seen the season play out with it, see what the impact the goalkeepers could have had, because they would have been goalkeepers in the Paddy Clifford role at the weekend. But it turns out, if you're good enough, you can still do the Paddy Clifford role. And that was the problem. It wasn't that they were hand-passing it to each other. It was that there was an extra man available.
Yeah, I don't think you see what I'm saying. It's not the hand-passing itself, not the act of it. It's not like I love kick passing, right? It's the idea that I'm going to keep the ball between you and me, the distance that we are apart, and backwards as well, when I'm in an area of a game where I could actually win it. And then you're watching it as a fan, certainly as a neutral, and you're like, oh geez, I know how this is going to play out, because they have no ambition to go forward, and why should they? Now last year, that's exasperated because there wasn't enough incentive for teams to be ambitious at all. Because what are they going to do? Try a point from outside a 40-meter arc that didn't exist. So I'm not saying it's the root cause, but it's interesting to me that they haven't tried to tackle it when it's still a problem. It's still excessive, in my opinion. It's not in your opinion.
Okay.
I think the backcourt thing would definitely help with the hand passing. So if you're trying to keep possession in the opposition's half, once you've crossed that line, you can't go back over. Just naturally gives you way less space.
Yeah, I see. I funnily enough, I think that's excessively punitive that you can't go backwards, because then there will be a way to combat that where the number of turnovers would be insane. It'd be absolutely insane because you're going to run out of options. Like, half your options are gone straight away in possession. Look, it's a tricky thing to make this a perfect game, but like, it's unbelievably improved, I think, far beyond the realms that people expected.
Yeah.
I think, I'm trying to take my mind back to the start of the year. I thought there would be way more chaos. I thought it would take way longer for players to adapt to it.
Yeah.
Think of a few incidents there have been, like Dublin were caught twice, weren't they, in the All-Ireland series with the three-man breach. I think twice Quebec against Armagh, actually, the game that they lost in Armagh, against Armagh. And other than that, like, I thought the descent thing would be huge. I thought players wouldn't be able to shut their mouths there and they'd be 50 metres up.
Yeah,
haven't seen it. So it's unbelievable how quickly the players have adapted. So it's immeasurably better. But I'm just saying, you can still improve the sport. And what's really interesting to me is that they're tackling the 4-point goal again. I thought that would never see the light of day, ever, after the Croke Park trial last October.
It's definitely a thing, though, where it's like an artist doing a painting. You can definitely do too much. Sometimes you just have to know when to leave it.
There's a part, if they change these again, right, it was like, would the players have too much to think about now during the game? It was like, what rules of this match?
Yeah.
What are the actual rules here? As opposed to, let's see how we can actually win the game. It transpired that they were able to adapt and there was some great football played up until, let's say, the semi-final. It was a brilliant year. And even then, there was still quite a lot of intrigue. But I suppose, yeah, when is, you know, another rule one too many?
Yeah.
That's the question.
The tabloids are all going with Ollie Watkins this morning. Summer Ollie days. Amorim wants Watkins at United. That is the Star. The Sun has the same story. What a striker. Pal Brian hails complete Ollie, because obviously they were former teammates rampaging across English football when they were younger men and less wealthy as they are now.
Obviously, Mbeumo signed for 71 million, and it looks like Watkins is available for 40-ish. All Trafford, you know, to make Aston Villa and England star Watkins their number one target. It's him and Sesko is the report, although there's scepticism about whether or not the Sesko thing is real. As a Man United fan, you'd be delighted to see Ollie Watkins fetching up?
I'd be happy. Not, I don't know about delighted. I don't think he's absolutely top notch. I don't think he believes he's great. But I think he's very good, Premier League striker who will get you on a good day and a good campaign 15 to 20 goals. He has moments of quality in him. Like, look at England against the Dutch. He wins the game for them in a major tournament, right at the death of it as well. But if Ollie Watkins is a one-on-one at the Etihad, Manchester Derby, and the game's on the line, I'm not massively believing that he's going to score.
Yeah. I think he had the third worst conversion rate of any Premier League striker last season. And United don't tend to give their strikers too many chances in front of goals. So
definitely an upgrade. So Watkins would improve the squad. But, you know, I just wonder why anyone's going to United at the moment. Like, if you're in a better place in your career if you're with Villa than United, really. But I think the ego often wins in the last 12 years that players go and think that they can be the ones to change it around at United. You make more money, you have a higher profile, so there are obvious objectable incentives.
Well, you're a professional footballer who's going to get paid more money. And all the moves, every time you make a move, you get an injection of cash and the opportunity to renegotiate. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is the house always wins. Like, over a period of time, at some point, Manchester United will sort things out and they will get back to being the team who has the highest wage bill and the most earning capacity. And as a result of that, they will win stuff. Like, that's what's going to happen at some point. Whether or not it's under this manager, I guess we'll find out. He does seem to have a bit more about him than some of the recent managers. All that "we're totally broke and can't afford to sign anybody" was all bollocks, and they've signed relatively well. Mbeumo, Cunha, and a third player up front means that they're going to have attacking players next season who want to be at the club, who the manager has signed, and who will do, you would imagine, what they're supposed to do, as opposed to coming in and stinking the joint out.
Yeah, their market, United, now will be the likes of Brentford and Wolves, and it has to be. It's like when Ferguson took over and he was signing, like, who ended up being great players like Pallister and Bruce, Parker, was all from middling clubs like Norwich and Middlesbrough and Chelsea at the time. And that is the market, really. There's kind of no point signing players who were 2 or 3 years past it, who wouldn't mind one final paycheck and the additional boost in profile. That's why I kind of question Watkins. Watkins is kind of in between all of that. Like, he's going to play plenty of games for Villa. Villa, you think, would be more competitive than United. But that sweet thing of playing at United is just a huge attraction to people still to this day. Maybe if you play the medium game and you're like, look, United will be relatively, by their terms, more out of the limelight this coming season because they're not playing in Europe. You won't see them as much, basically, as often as you once did. So maybe you're going under the radar, you're having a season or two that's kind of quiet by United standards, and then you come out the other side. And if you want to be part of that build, not a bad option. But I would question Watkins' choice there.
What do you think of the signings they've made so far?
They're fine. Like, I mean, like, Cunha, he's a very good player for Wolves, but it's just, it's incomparable. Same with Mbeumo's. It's hard to know when you're playing with a club like Wolves and Brentford. There's only so much attention on those clubs. It's huge where they're from locally and all that, but basically they kind of get away with a lot of games that they lose or draw, and no one's really talking about it. And being a big fish in a small pond is very, very different to playing at a club with the profile of United. So it's a totally different mindset for them. So they have it all to prove at the same time as playing for this club who are, you'd argue, going nowhere.
And do you still think they're going nowhere? Like, it's a reset now. He's had his off-season to implement his game plan, whatever physical conditioning they need to do to be able to play the way he wants them to play. Like, this is the bit where, if, say, they had that limp season at the end last year with a different manager and Ruben Amorim comes in with his record and they sign, like, the two of the best available attacking talents in the league and potentially a third backup who has, like, you know, a seasoned Premier League striker who you hope regresses to the mean when it comes to his shot. That's no, like, no sense of hope.
No, there's hope. There's hope in that the original hope is all last. So it's a new blank slate of hope that you can fill for yourself, whatever you want to do. Like, can United get worse this coming season? Yes, by one level, which would be relegation. Like,
yeah, but that's
how close they were last season. If it wasn't for the inability of Championship clubs to be able to play in the Premier League at the moment, which is a real thing, and let's see what happens this season, you know, you would have been in serious peril.
Yeah, and that's why they've signed Mbouang and Cunha, who'll score hopefully between them 35 goals.
Well, that's best case scenario. Like, I'd be very, very skeptical of that. Like, I think it's easy to underestimate the difference in attention that they're going to get. And I'm saying that by what I just said is going to be a relatively quiet season by United standards. They're still going to have way more focus on them than at their peak at Wolves and Brentford.
So let's just see how they adapt to that. Realistic expectations, you think, is like 10th.
Probably top half. Yeah, because like they've only signed two players. They've released a few
so far.
It's going to be a similar. Yeah, but we're going by now. We're going by what's happening right now.
Yeah, but
so it's a similar.
There'll be a lot of
similar-ish squad.
There'll be more activity. Is it not a recast squad? He's got rid of the malcontents. They're still talking about getting a new goalkeeper. The injury profile has vastly improved. I think Lisandro Martinez is still going to be out until potentially January. But they had like chronic injuries last season, which seemed to be improving. And the team will have the shape that you expect it to have. Luke Shaw has this morning said that he expects the team to compete for the Premier League title. Is that just the thing you say when you're asked?
I think he just has to say that though, doesn't he?
Does he? Was he actually better off saying, our job is to get this club back to where we belong, which is the Champions League, and that's what we're going to be fighting for and all, as opposed to we want to win the title? Because that seems unrealistic. So anyway, look, maybe that's just a sideshow. Maybe he just does have to say that. Is the team not a decent team, and is this not Amram's?
It's both a decent team and not a great team, if you look at it. Depends how they're getting on. So if you go through the goalkeeper to the striker, if it's a bad run of form, you could change all of them. You could literally sell all of them overnight and it wouldn't be a big deal. If they're on a run of like two wins and a draw and they're doing okay, you're like, yeah, there's a bit of talent in that squad. You could rip the whole thing up and I don't think too many United fans would lose sleep over it. So it's very difficult to know how the season's going to go. The only thing in their favour is that no European football, they won't play as much. Amram will have more time with them at the training ground. They're all probably at a low ebb at this point. I'm amazed Fernandes stayed. Amazed.
Yeah.
Happy that he stayed.
Yeah, like ultimately, when it comes to like, you know, February and like he's scoring two goals away to Fulham, you're like, oh yeah, at least, you know, I don't think anyone else is going to do that for him. So that they'll be thankful then that he did it. But I'm amazed that he decided to stay. But for Amram, I think it's good for Amram because he'll have more time with them now and the expectations will be slightly lower than they were, ironically, when he took over mid-season.
Like the only thing keeping a lot of United fans happy was Europe. So now that they don't have that, what if he ends up having a bad season?
Yeah, it's kind of the reset that they've probably needed way sooner than they've gotten, really, is that just no, like, you're not going to call Europe distraction, but no additional workload that the squad is just not capable of doing, really.
But if they don't improve or don't improve massively, they'll obviously finish a few places higher this season, but if they don't, momentum could really swing against them then, because he's nothing really to... Like, he could have a decent cup run, but I don't think United fans really care about cup runs now, because...
And they think they take the... Bite your hand off for a trophy.
You do and you don't. Like, I never really buy into that, like, trophy thing saves everything, right? Because United have won everything since Ferguson left, except the Premier League and Champions League, and look where they are now. So it's really just those two trophies that make a difference for United. Like, Ten Hag won the FA Cup, right? And they were like, oh, we have to keep him now. And... it was a totally wrong decision to make. If United won the Europa League, just gone, great that they're in the Champions League. That's huge. But like, geez, I don't think it's a massive celebration they've won the Europa League. It's like, geez, what kind of a season was that? They won the League Cup under Ten Hag. It was happy days at the time. A week later, what happened? They went to Anfield and lost by 7. That's what's remembered from that month. You know, again, it's the poison of being at United. Like, it's this expectations versus reality. Yep. And they're massively apart. And unless they win the league or the Champions League, you're never really going to believe that they're back.
I think the only thing is that if they did need to sign within the Premier League, because the last few signings that have come from outside have just been a disaster, like Hoyland, Anthony, that hasn't worked.
Yeah.
So it's good to see some actual proven goal scorers within the league.
If you could take a season off, it would be a great option. If you could just bow out, take a gap year. I always thought Leicester should have taken the year off, the year after they won the league. There's nothing they can do here. There's no high they can tap here. And that would be a great option for United. But instead,
this year,
they'll have this. Yeah. They just need a complete reset. It's like the joy that's been bestowed on all of us about the fact that we haven't had to talk about United in about 2 months is amazing. And now we're back into this and we're about to chat with Jonathan Wilson and we're back into it then.
I mean, I enjoyed our chats over recent years.
It's your Cork. It's going to be like 10 months of this though.
I think the expectation should be slightly higher. I think we'll see. If anybody has views, 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. You can get us on youtube.com/offtheball. A reminder, Off the Ball Breakfast is with UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Football on Off the Ball.
Toby, I just a little bit standoffish, to be honest. And I just said that to the lads in the dressing room. We're getting too much respect. And for me, on a football pitch, when you give the teams too much respect, it's a fear. Yeah, didn't like it.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.